They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining us today, I have Ryan Torrens of the Torrens Law Group out of Tampa, Florida. And guess what, guys? He specializes in HOA foreclosures and foreclosures and in protecting homeowners. How many attorneys do you know across the country who do that? Ryan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
As I told you before we started recording, you are worth your weight in gold because so many people find themselves losing their homes for pennies and they don't have anywhere to go. What goes on in Florida? Do you have non-judicial foreclosure, or do people actually have to go to court to get a foreclosure notice, or what happens?
Yes. In the state of Florida, we have a judicial foreclosure system. And so in Florida, a foreclosure is just like any other lawsuit where a complaint is filed. You have the right to file your defenses in that case. You have the right to what we call discovery, which is where you can require the bank to produce pertinent documents, et cetera. You even have the right to take the deposition of the bank's corporate representative and to inquire of issues that way. And so it's just like any other lawsuit. So, yes, we do have a judicial system here in Florida for foreclosures.
So you actually go in front of a judge?
Yes. So under Florida law, you do not have the right to a jury trial when it comes to foreclosures. And that's per Florida statute. All of the trials and the hearings in the foreclosure cases are before a judge. Sometimes you'll be in front of a magistrate who will make recommendations to a judge, but they really, even the magistrates operate as a judge. So, yes, they're what we call bench trials. There's no juries.
Because there was a story out of Florida a number of years ago where a family lost their home, and the legal requirement going to court was walking down a hallway and having a clerk just stamp their paperwork. And that, in essence, was the judicial foreclosure.
Yes. So the way it works here is you have to be served with the lawsuit. If you're not served, then, you know, we attack the case from that angle. You have the right to be properly served with process. Usually it will be by a process server who will come and deliver the papers to you personally. From that point in Florida, you have 20 days to respond to the lawsuit, either through the form of what we call an answer in affirmative defenses or through a motion to dismiss. If the bank and their attorneys try to kind of pull a fast one and not serve you properly and there is a judgment entered, we've handled those types of cases as well, and we'll seek to vacate the judgment and provide you with an opportunity to defend the case. So Florida does require proper service of process, and there's a lot of case law in Florida that we can use to really enforce that.
Across the country, I keep hearing of cases where people are losing their homes over
negligible amounts of money, like $100 in dues. And sometimes even those are in dispute because, you know, the homeowner claim and the homeowner in a lot of cases seems to have a canceled check. Yet the association continues down the road of foreclosure. And before you know it, even though they've paid, they seem to end up with thousands of dollars in late fees and penalties and legal fees that just add up and add up and add up. And is there no way of stopping? I'm sure that happens in Florida. I just read a case in Texas today.
Yes. So I can tell you from my experience with these cases, the fundamental issue is that Florida law does not require that the association place you on notice, either written or verbal notice, that there is an issue with your account. And so what often happens is there is a small fee, maybe a fine because your grass is too long or because your house is discolored. And the association will impose the fee. And so let's say, just for sake of argument, you pay the fee, but let's say you pay it just a few days late. So they add, let's say, a $10 or $15 late fee, but you never pay the late fee. Well, then what ends up happening is you continue to pay your association dues. The association is allowed to continue to accept those dues, but they will apply those payments towards any interest, any late fees, any attorney's fees for any letters or anything they've been writing. And so you have an ongoing default in your account and you don't realize it. Well, the associations are not required to send you a letter telling you that. They just keep accepting your payments and applying them in that manner. So then what ends up happening is they let a few years go by and they send you a certified letter called a notice of intent to record a claim of lien. And then that letter will often say, okay, now not only do you owe the original amount that you missed, but you owe interest, late charges, and a couple grand, and attorney's fees, because now they've gotten lawyers involved. So it goes from a very negligible amount to a larger amount. And depending on whether it's a condominium association or a homeowners association, you would typically have between 30 and 45 days to pay that. If you do not, then they will file a foreclosure action on your property. So it's really the whole issue of the associations not being required to timely notify you of issues with your account and not required to provide a dispute process early on that creates a lot of these situations. And really, in my opinion at least, is that's where the law needs to be changed. Just like if you miss a credit card payment, they send you a letter telling you you're late, here's what's due and owing, and they do that in a timely fashion. They should be required to do that on these cases.
I think fines should be banned. There are two Supreme Court there's one Supreme Court decision in Virginia and one in Rhode Island that claims that fines by associations is unconstitutional. And so for your grass, I mean, that's ridiculous when they fine you and then you lose your home because somebody decides that your grass is the wrong color, shade of green. And it gets down to that ridiculousness. Also in Maryland, they have capped attorney fees because they had a huge problem with these fees that just spiraled out of control.
Yes, yes. Exactly. There is, you know, a lot of these situations start with very minor, at least what we would perceive as minor issues. You know, I've had cases where the blades of grass were going onto the sidewalk a little bit, and the association, you know, took issue with that, and they imposed a fee. What I recommend to people is we can argue about the laws all day long, and everyone has their positions on what those laws should say, and that's really a policy issue. But what I recommend to people who are in a possible situation like this is be as diligent as you possibly can. If there is ever any kind of an issue regarding a late fee or a $100 or $200 fine, don't just pay it. Pay it if it's valid. Pay it. and then ask for an accounting and ask for a zero balance letter from the association confirming that you're paid up. That's what you need. Don't just send a check and then keep paying your dues. You got to stay on the associations to make sure the accounting is being done correctly, because they're not required to notify you if there's an issue.
And that brings me to another question. Are they required to cash a check? Because I've heard of cases where people have submitted their checks and the association just flat refuses to cash it. They sit on it. So you don't end up with a canceled check. You don't end up with anything. And there, in some of these cases, there's no law that says you have to accept it.
Yes. So if you are paying what is allegedly owed, then yes, they would need to cash the check. However, what usually happens in these cases is a homeowner will get a letter that says, here's the principal amount you owe, here's the late charges, and here's the attorney's fees. What the homeowner will try to do, reasonably, is they'll send a check for everything except the late charges and the attorney's fees. And so the association will cash that check. Well, they're not current as much as the homeowner may think that they're current, because the association is allowed to cash that check and credit it in that fashion. So you're still in default. So, but if they send you a letter and they say, you owe $750, pay it in 30 days, and you send a check for $750, if that's literally what's owed and nothing more, then yes, they would need to cash that check. If they did not cash the check and you were paying precisely what was owed, and then they proceeded to try to foreclose on your home, that would be a significant defense in the foreclosure action. One of the reasons that they are hesitant to cash checks, if it is not what they claim to be the full amount due and owing, is because if they do accept those checks, that sometimes that can create a defense for a homeowner that we call waiver. That if you accept these checks and then you try to foreclose, we can sometimes argue that you've waived your rights to initiate the foreclosure because you continue to accept the payment. So to be safe, sometimes the association will just send the check back because they want to preserve their rights to foreclose on the property.
So that puts the homeowner in an untenable position because they're trying to do what they feel is right. The association claims that they're bottom feeders and they're nasty people because they're living off their neighbors, yet they're refusing to accept the checks. And it just goes around and around and around.
Yes, yes, and that's why, really, I think there needs to be a change in the law. So just like with a debt collector, if they get a debt that you have and now they're going to try to collect, they've got to send you a letter and say, here's what's due and owing. You have 30 days to respond to us and to dispute it. And while that dispute process is going on, they're not allowed to sue you. They have to prove the amounts due and owing. Well, if there was a similar requirement for the associations for them to send you a letter when there's an issue, tell you have 30 days to dispute it, and a stipulation in the law that they are not allowed to foreclose while that dispute process is taking place, it would really provide a remedy for homeowners to be aware of this issue before it escalates. Because once it gets to that point of a letter threatening a claim of lien, it might have gone from $100 or $200 to a couple grand. And that's because there's not that requirement for an early dispute process. So it really does put people in a situation, and a lot of people they honestly don't understand because the association keeps taking their quarterly dues payments. So they think everything's okay, when really it's not okay.
The Community Associations Institute has been lobbying the federal government to exempt attorneys from following the FDC, the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act. If it is the, and you know, sometimes when you're sitting here, I mean, I'm sitting here in Virginia, and I read these stories from around the country, and it's always the same legal firms that seem to be involved in some of these nasty, nasty stories and deals. Are they not considered, if they're over there sort of advising their clients, their HOAs, to foreclose. I guess the the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act does not apply to them, does it? Or should it? Maybe it should. Maybe by extension they should be required to notify the homeowners.
Yes. And, you know, there is always a lot of litigation regarding who qualifies as a debt collector under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. One useful tool that we have in Florida is we have a companion law that is quite similar to the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, but it's called the Florida Consumer Collection Practices Act. And that law actually applies to any person. It can even apply to an individual, not just debt collectors. And that law is pretty powerful because it has that broader application. And so we have been able to use that statute from time to time for leverage when needed, because it says you can't threaten to enforce a legal right which doesn't exist, and that does apply to not just debt collectors, but really to any person, and it does provide for attorney's fees to the prevailing party. Another issue that we get into sometimes in Florida is the issue of, to what extent do the associations really have the right to try to collect attorney's fees? Is the statute relating to associations generally say that they can recover attorney's fees incurred. Well, one of the things that we have learned in some of these cases is that a lot of these associations are not actually incurring any attorney's fees. They're not actually paying their lawyers fees. The attorneys collect those fees from the homeowners. So we, from time to time, have presented that as an issue, and usually it will result in a pretty favorable settlement for our clients, because sometimes the associations don't really want to get into that. Because if court decisions start coming out finding that they are not entitled to those fees, they could possibly subject themselves to liability under the Florida Consumer Collection Practices Act, and at least arguably the FDCPA as well.
So, wow. I read someplace in one of the articles I have here that a lot of the attorneys will go in, and it's sort of like a bounty hunt. They'll walk in and they'll say, look, you don't have to pay me. I'll represent you, and I'll collect from fines and fees, and I'll go after the homeowners directly. So the association says, great, we're just out of it. You go. So can you hire someone on that basis? I mean, there's something that sounds ridiculously unethical about it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, typically you would just consider that to be a standard contingency arrangement, which would be that they don't get paid unless they recover from the homeowner. I think where it gets tricky for them is where the statutes say that you can only recover attorney's fees incurred. And so that's where the issue arises, because the associations are not actually incurring any attorney's fees. So it's not like your standard personal injury case where you take, you know, 33 1/3 of the gross settlement for your services rendered. These are statutes that require that the fees be incurred. So that's really where they run into an issue. Because if a court finds that they're not entitled to those attorney's fees because they were never incurred in the first place, now they're stuck with a claim against them because they're trying to collect on money that they're not entitled to. And this has really helped this proliferate, because, like you pointed out, the associations are not actually having to pay attorney's fees. So they have law firms, large law firms, at their disposal, you know, whenever they need them, because they're not having to pay invoices on a monthly basis. That oftentimes they're not paying anything at all. And, you know, one could argue, too, that this may provide an incentive for the excessive billing by some of the association attorneys, because they're making their money off of the homeowners. And so, there arguably could be an incentive there to inflate the billing, because they're recovering at the back end from the homeowners.
What are the odds? I mean, I know that one state, and I'm not sure, I should follow up and I should find out how it's working out, but I do, as I mentioned earlier, I do know that there's at least one state, and I believe that there are some other states that are considering lobbying for and requesting caps on legal fees because they just are out of control in some cases. What do you think? Do you think that's something that might work in Florida? And how do you think that might affect this whole entire practice if the attorneys couldn't collect as much as they wanted to?
Are you referring to a possible cap on attorney's fees?
Yeah, I think they're limiting it to a percentage of what is owed. So, for instance, earlier when you talked about maybe a $15 fine for grass growing on the sidewalk or whatever it is, and then you've got $3,000 in legal fees to collect that $15 fine. You know, it's ridiculous. So I think the cap is, and I'm not sure exactly how the wording is, but I think it's based on a percentage of what is actually owed.
So, yes, and a possible cap on attorney's fees may be an option that the legislature may want to consider to help curb some of these practices. I think maybe you know the legislature should consider combining that with enhanced notice requirements for these associations to timely place people on notice of any issues regarding their accounts. And then if there were some caps on the attorney's fees, that would probably limit the incentive for the associations and their counsel to inflate any billing against homeowners, if there was a cap imposed. So, I would assume the associations would raise some challenges to that cap, possible, you know, constitutional challenges or other legal challenges to that cap if it were to be imposed. But I think that's something that the legislature may want to consider as a reform package for Florida's association laws.
What are you doing in terms of the legislative session right now? Is it in full swing or are you gearing up towards it?
You know, actually, what's kind of funny and interesting is I have been so busy in my own practice representing people facing these situations that I have not even really had the time to lobby or to be active with the legislative session. My goal would be eventually to get more involved in that, but really, especially as a solo practitioner, we get so busy in the daily grind of representing homeowners facing these situations that it's hard to find time to do much of the advocacy. But I really would encourage the legislature to do something about it because I see this at the ground level every day, and a lot of this could be stopped through changes. And so I would leave it to others, you know, such as yourself, to form groups and form nonprofit advocacy groups that can go to Tallahassee and lobby the legislature for these changes. I wish I had more time for that, but representing all these clients facing foreclosure doesn't leave us with too much time left, you know?
Oh, I understand, and I just want to let everyone know that it's taken me, what, about 3 weeks to get you on?
Yeah.
So I know how busy you are. I don't live in Florida, so I couldn't get involved
That's
in
right.
Florida.
But
however, I do know people in Florida who are working diligently to try and get some of this stuff done. The problem is getting it passed. They'll find legislators to carry their bills, and then they just don't seem to get passed. But you have a very active group in Florida, organization, Cyber Citizens for Justice, that's been doing a bang-up job for a long time, and a lot of Floridians who are very involved in trying to get some of that stuff stopped, including a former legislator, Julio Robina, who's working now as a manager, by the way, and in Miami. And he's doing, I think, a lot of legislative activity. So
yes, and that is fantastic. You know, most of our efforts, of course, are on the ground level and going to court all the time on these cases, representing people. But I just, I would encourage them to do whatever they can to get these laws changed, because although that may end up reducing some of the work that we have, that would be fine by us, because a lot of homeowners are really getting put in bad situations over this, and a lot of it could just be stopped through changes in the laws. And, you know, I know a lot of it gets into politics and who has the most lobbying power and all that stuff, and that's just the reality of it. And hopefully one day the legislature will come to its senses and do what's right for Floridians, because that's what they're voted in for anyway.
How long have you been doing this, Ryan?
I have been doing this full-time in my own practice for about 4 years. I started my own practice pretty early on. I'm a young attorney, but we've been at it full-time for 4 years.
And how did you get into it? How did you decide this is what you want to do? Because probably you could make a whole lot of money on the other side.
Yeah? Yeah, but then I might not sleep as good at night. No.
All right. I like you, Ryan.
You know, I'm a passionate kind of person, and this is really what I'm passionate about. And I like to help people, and it makes you feel good about what you do. And, of course, the associations, just like banks and any other institutions, have the right to good lawyers, just like people do. And I strongly believe in everyone having the right to a good lawyer. But this is what I love to do. The way I fell into it was after I graduated from law school, I ended up working on a big project here in Tampa as a consultant, and it was the government mandated foreclosure review project. And that was a government mandated review of a lot of these toxic loans that a lot of the large banks, such as Bank of America, had underwritten and approved. And there was a lot of litigation going on over that, and the federal government was pursuing some of these banks, such as Bank of America, for this issue. So they needed consultants to review all these loans to see what had gone wrong, to see if the banks had sent default letters properly prior to foreclosing on people. There's a lot of bad things that happened because of the economic collapse and so forth. So I was one of those consultants, and when I was working on that project, I didn't work for Bank of America. I worked as an independent consultant. When I was reviewing a lot of these loans, I realized how many problems there really were with loans being approved that should have never been approved, with the banks not properly notifying people with foreclosures, and I thought to myself, this might be an interesting area to work in. And in Florida, the case law had just kind of started to develop around mortgage foreclosure, because it was never really that big of an issue. And a lot of new cases started to come out, and it kind of became an interesting area. And I've always liked to just help, you know, help regular people. And so what ended up happening was the government settled with the bank, and so they no longer needed the consultants. So I was out of a job. Well, I started my own law practice and started working in foreclosure defense right away. I did a little advertising, picked up about a dozen cases, and then we started getting a lot of referrals from that, family and friends of current and former clients, and started building our practice that way. And still to this day, a very large percentage of our cases are referrals still, and we're very proud of that. So that's how I ended up getting involved in it.
Actually, referrals are the best way of building your practice. So, congratulations on that. You say the government settled with the banks. What did they say? Oh, okay, you can keep stealing from people, or you can keep foreclosing, or
yes, they did a very large. they did a large settlement with them, and I honestly don't even know all the terms of it. I just knew that I found out about it when I was on the way to work, and my girlfriend happened to be in the passenger seat, and she was reading the New York Times. Her and I both like to read the New York Times. And so we're reading the New York Times, or she is, and she sees that the government settled with the banks, and she says, "Well, Ryan, I think you're out of a job." So sure enough, I walk into the office, and they come out there and say, "Everyone go home. You're all fired."
Wow.
And so, yeah, I found out I was going to be terminated while I was driving to work, so that was interesting. But yeah, I don't know all the terms of it. I think it was a pretty intricate settlement agreement that was quite lengthy, and I never really took the time to review all the details because we usually can't use that kind of thing in our court cases. But yeah, so that's how I learned about these issues and got interested, and here we are 4 years later, and we're still going at it.
So the largest part of your practice now, is it HOAs or banks or?
Actually, the largest part of it is bank foreclosures.
Still.
And we also file quite a few lawsuits against banks and debt collectors for Fair Debt Collections Practices Act violations, Florida Consumer Collection Practices Act violations, Telephone Consumer Protection Act claims. We represent consumers and actually filing lawsuits against banks. But a smaller portion of our practice is the association foreclosures. They're just, you know, for whatever reason, not as many come in. I think a lot of those folks try to handle it on their own, whereas when they're facing a mortgage foreclosure, more people are inclined to seek representation. I would say, it's probably an excess of 80 to 85% of our cases are actually mortgage foreclosure cases.
And how long have you been doing the HOAs? All 4 years?
Yeah, we've been handling those pretty much the entire time.
So my guess is that's going to increase. I see it increasing across the country. I was reading about a vet in Texas this morning who lost his home because he owed $100. But 9 times out of 10, it's such sloppy accounting practices by the HOA that they're going after homeowners who've actually paid and they've cashed the checks, but they still end up having to pick up all the fees and fines and, you know, legal fees and all of that. That has to stop. That's unethical.
Yes, it is. And you know what's really sad too is that a lot of these people that end up in these association foreclosures are current on their mortgage. And
yes.
So these are people who have paid a lot of money towards their mortgage to pay it down, and then they end up risking losing their home over a small amount of money. And so I would just tell them, if you think there's any issues going on, if you think the association is playing games with your account, talk to a lawyer right away, because it is certainly not worth losing your home to either the association or to an investor who may purchase the property at the sale. When you're paying your mortgage, you put all this money into the home, there's really no reason for it. And even though the laws are kind of skewed right now, if there are any issues, call a lawyer right away so you can get it rectified early on. That's what I would tell people. Don't make assumptions. Don't listen to the association's representations about things. Call a lawyer who handles these types of cases.
The best advice is get some help. What are the chances?
Yes.
What are the chances of turning the tables on the HOA? So, for instance, I'm sitting there and let us say, just for the hell of it, because there's certain vulnerable groups, the elderly, the disabled, single parents, you know, they're not quite as ready and able to defend themselves. But let us say I'm sitting there and the HOA decided, shoo, I don't like you anymore and I'm going to do everything I can to get rid of you. And frankly, that's pretty much the way things go sometimes. So can you sue and get and have the HOA pay a lot of damages to the homeowner for putting them through all the misery and the agony and all of the nonsense that they put them through? Does
you
that
know,
work?
We have not had any like that in our office. Usually in our office, you know, to be quite honest, with the association cases, it's really a matter of trying to increase our leverage to get a favorable settlement for the client. we have, you know, we have a lot of good judges in Florida, but you have to remember that judges are human and the laws are skewed in favor of associations. And so if you get into court, it's always a risk. It's always a risk that you lose, even if you feel like you have a good case. And so on a lot of these, what we try to do is to, you know, create, or not even create, just to use these issues that are present to get a reasonable, good settlement for our clients so that they can save their homes. Because it is always a risk going in front of a court. And when your home's at stake and you're current on your mortgage and it's just this outstanding association issue, a lot of these we try to get favorable settlements for our clients. And we've been very successful in doing that.
No, I agree. And to get that, but to compensate them for what they've been through, especially if you have cases, and we've all read about them, we all know about them, where the homeowner has paid, the association has decided for whatever reason that it was late or they still owed money, and of course we know how it spirals out of control. The homeowner is blameless because they've done what they were supposed to do. And yet they've been put through all of that nonsense. Upset families, uprooted, you know, upset kids, uprooted families, and it's just taken over their lives.
Yes. If the homeowner truly has done everything they're supposed to do, yes, they could very well have a claim for damages against the association. We, you know, most of our cases are more complicated than that. There's little wrinkles in the case. There may be an issue with small late fees that mess things up. And so we have not had the types of cases where we would really pursue a large claim for damages against the association. Really, our focus is trying to save the house. So, but to answer your question, if someone did everything they were supposed to do and they were put in this situation, could there be a claim for damages? Absolutely. Absolutely there could be a claim for damages and for a recovery of their attorney's fees.
And you've never heard of any of these cases going to court and being won by the homeowner, huh?
I'm sure they have. I have not handled any myself where we have actually pursued claims for damages against associations, but I am sure that they have. I would expect that they have taken that they have happened, and some attorneys have. I would expect have successfully prosecuted those cases. But in our firm, we have not had any, and maybe one day we will. But we have not had any where we have taken that approach. But I can tell you that we have. Just thinking back in the time that I've been doing this. We have not had a single homeowner lose their home to an association foreclosure, and I'm proud to say that, and that is objectively verifiable. We have never had one involuntarily lose their house through an association, okay. And I think that shows that we're doing something right, because we've handled quite a few of them. But yeah, I'm sure if you search the records, reached out to other lawyers, I'm sure there's been some that have. You know, successfully prosecuted those claims for damages against associations.
Well, congratulations on saving the homes, because that's huge. That's a big one. And good luck with all the rest of them, because I have a feeling you're going to be dealing with a whole lot more of these. They're going to be coming down the pike at you, Ryan.
Yes, we are not lacking business. I can tell you that. That is not one of our problems. There's plenty of business coming in, because unfortunately a lot of these people are facing this situation. So there's a lot of it going on.
So if the laws were changed, and you know, people are going to violate the laws anyway, even if it says that you may not, then you have to do this, that, and the other, you know that HOAs aren't going to do that. But what one law do you think would help homeowners, instead of having to go through all of this hassle? You know, life is complicated enough as it is, as you know. And without having to drop everything to try and protect your house, it, is half paid for, you know, maybe all paid for. Some of them are mortgage free, and they go after them anyway.
Yes, my opinion is that the most important thing, just from what I've seen in these cases, the most important change would be an early notification process to notify homeowners, really through one letter certified mail, one letter regular mail, that would place them on notice that there is an issue with their account. They are not current. They have 30 days to dispute it. And I think that is, out of all the issues, I think that right there is the most important issue. And may one of the things that the legislature may want to consider as well would be a possible requirement for a pre-suit mediation. There are other areas of litigation where pre-suit mediation is required, and that would provide an opportunity for everyone to get together and try to resolve these issues before the homeowners at risk of losing their house. That may be something that would really work well here as well, where a homeowner would have to be invited to mediation before a foreclosure could be filed.
And that would be with legal representation, obviously.
Yeah, if the homeowner chose to do so. You know, of course, the estate's not going to pay for a private attorney on these types of cases, but they would have every opportunity to retain their own counsel. And if they couldn't get counsel, at least they have the right to have a meeting with an impartial mediator and with the association and their counsel to try to figure out what it is that's going on and to resolve the situation before it goes to court. And right now, that you can, when you get sued, you can file a motion for mediation, and oftentimes we do. But a lot of folks who don't have representation don't know that. And so what happens is they just send a letter. They get sued, and they write a little letter, and they send it to the court. Well, legally, that letter is usually not legally sufficient. It's not going to defeat a motion for summary judgment by the association. But if the law said associations cannot foreclose until they have invited this homeowner to a formal mediation with an impartial mediator, then if they go and sue you and they haven't invited you to that mediation, well, their case can be dismissed because of that. So I think that's something the legislature should also consider.
How often do the mediators find in favor of the homeowners? Because I know in arbitration quite often it's the association usually prevails as well.
You know, that depends on the mediator. That's another reason it's important that these people, these folks in these situations, get a lawyer. Because most of us that do this type of work, we know the good mediators. We know the mediators who are fair. And we know the mediators that lean towards the creditor. And there's even some mediators that really lean towards the homeowner, believe it or not. There's a few.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but we like to work with those mediators that are strong and encourage the parties to come off of their position and that are impartial. Because if you have a mediator that the association sees as being hostile to them, they're not going to want to listen to what that mediator has to say. And a mediation is completely voluntary, and so you're not required to enter into any kind of settlement if you don't choose to do so. So we like those mediators who are strong and who are fair and who are seen by both sides as being fair, because my experience has been those are the mediators that can get the best results.
So I guess you can't have a list of these are good mediators up there someplace.
Well, if there's anyone in Florida who needs representation, they call my office. I have a list.
Yeah, list, but you can't publish it. But you know, if the association's going to go in with an attorney, I mean, there's no question about it. They
of course.
They're just not going to send the manager whoever. So if you've got an attorney on that side, you really ought to have an attorney on your side.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's just an unfortunate reality of the situation is that you're going to be treated with more respect in the judicial system if you have a lawyer. A lot of times it's just a matter of showing up and having a lawyer sitting next to you. Your lawyer might not even be the greatest lawyer. He might not be a good lawyer at all. But just showing up with a lawyer almost instantly gets you more respect and more credibility. If you show up on your own without a lawyer, They're going to assume that you don't know the rules. They're going to assume you don't know how to properly file pleadings in the court case. They're going to assume you don't know how to defend yourself, and that they're just going to stomp all over you. So I never recommend people to just show up without a lawyer. Always try to have a lawyer if it's possible, because you're going to have more respect and you're going to have a much better chance of saving your house if you have a lawyer.
So what are the odds of just getting everything settled at mediation? Does that happen often, or do you still have to go?
Most of the association mediations we have had, we have settled the case.
In favor of the homeowner?
Yes, I am a big proponent of mediation. I like to litigate. I go to court. I'm in court almost every week. I try cases. I love litigating cases. But as someone who litigates, I can also say I'm a very big proponent of mediation. And it's amazing what happens when people talk like adults. And a lot of times at mediation, that's when people can sit down with a mediator who will convince them to start talking like a logical, reasonable person and figure this situation out, so that we don't have extra costs for the homeowner, we don't have extra costs for the association, that we can act like reasonable people and figure this out in the best interest of everybody. Now, if you have a case that you feel very strongly about and you want to pursue a claim against the association, that may settle at mediation. But if it doesn't, that's a case that you take to court and that you try in front of the court. And that's fine. You know, we litigate cases too. But when someone's home is at risk, and, you know, a mediation can really be helpful, because sometimes that mediator will come in there and they'll say, look, stop being silly. A judge is not going to buy what you just told me. Act like an adult and let's figure out what we can do. And a lot of times you end up settling the case. And so I'm as someone who litigates, I am a big fan of mediation.
So mediators don't have to have law licenses. They don't have to be making decisions based on the law. They can just look at you and say, act like an adult. Problem is, I don't know too many adults, even though they're in adult bodies. They're just, their brains just don't seem to be there.
Yeah. Well, and that's where good mediators versus bad mediators comes in, too. It's just like with lawyers. You've got good ones, and then you have not so good ones. And you have ones who really care, and those who are really just there to collect their hourly rate. Same thing with attorneys. You have attorneys who really care, and then you have attorneys who just want to collect their hourly rate. And you know, we know who the mediators are who care, and those are the ones that we try to use. Because some just, they really don't care. And that's not helpful for anybody.
So are the mediators assigned by the court? I mean, if the court orders you to go to mediation.
Typically, the parties will agree to a mediator, is the way it will work.
Okay.
If the parties are literally fighting about who the mediator is going to be, then you can file a motion with the court, and the court will appoint a mediator.
When is it too late to go to mediation? I mean, if you go down one road and you look like you're just getting into the weeds out there, at what point?
You know,
is there usually a drop dead? Yeah, go on.
Usually you want to file a motion for mediation as soon as possible. A lot of times we will file our notice of appearance in the case, we'll file a response to the complaint, and we'll follow it up with a motion for mediation all on the same day, all at the same time. Because you want to try to mediate the case before you're too deep, like you said, before you're too deep in the case. Because then the parties feel like they're too invested to settle it, that they have to take it all the way. So if you mediate it early on, it can be helpful. Or remember, depending on the circumstances of the case, if you get a favorable ruling from a court, let's say there's a partial ruling on one of the issues in your favor. Then you move for mediation. Well, now you might have more leverage, because now the court's ruled with you on at least one of the issues. Let's say you have a partial summary judgment in your favor. Well, now you're probably going to really get a good deal at mediation. And what I encourage people to do is be smart. Try to be smart about these situations. If you get a partial ruling from a court in your favor, don't go and talk garbage to the other side. Sit down like an adult and use that as leverage to try to get yourself a good deal and resolve the situation. And we end up with that too. Sometimes the court has ruled on certain issues, and you know what? If you wait too long and the court rules against you on some of those issues, well, now your leverage just dropped. So if you go to mediation, the other side might tell you to pound sand. But usually we prefer to ask for mediation very early in the case. And typically the judges here in Florida, will they like to send the parties to mediation, because if the parties can settle the case on their own, then the court's out of it, and they can close out the case. And judges love to close out cases. So anytime parties can resolve the case, the judges are typically going to be all about that.
Well, you're making a whole lot of sense. And mediation is not binding. So if the mediator says something, acts like a child, and doesn't say anything particularly adult-like, you can still go to court. You've preserved that right.
Correct. Yes. It's confidential with limited exceptions. It's confidential, and it's not mandatory. You don't have to accept any settlement you don't like. Of course, if you agree to something in mediation and try to get out of it, now that's a different story. Then you might end up in trouble with that. But it's a voluntary process, and it is confidential. And what you say in mediation isn't supposed to be used against you in the court case, and isn't supposed to be shown to the judge and all that. So I'm a big fan of it, and I believe it's a really useful process. And I don't just say that. I say that from my experience, and I know the number of cases that we have resolved in mediation, and I've just seen the results in my own cases. So there's times to litigate, and then there's times to mediate, and sometimes in a case you have to do a little bit of both, and that's just the process. That's all, and that's another reason why it's important to have an attorney, because a lot of times these are turned into what I call dual track, which is you're trying to settle it on the one hand, and then you're trying to litigate it on the other, because sometimes you have to litigate it to give yourself the leverage that you need to get your client a good settlement. But if someone doesn't have a lawyer, usually they're not going to know how to successfully litigate a claim. And so they're going to be at a disadvantage.
You said with limited exceptions, it's confidential. What would the limited exceptions be?
For example, I believe one of the limited exceptions would be, and I don't know for sure, but I think this is one of the exceptions. If you had something where there was an allegation of a crime against one of the parties, then it may be disclosed there. Or if there was an allegation against one of the attorneys who was participating, then perhaps the attorney may be able to disclose some of those discussions to defend himself. So there are very limited exceptions, but there are a few exceptions. But for the most part, what's said in mediation stays in mediation.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, right?
Yes. Well, listen, I have a meeting coming up in a couple minutes here, so if we could wrap it up, that would be great.
Yeah, I was just about to say that we are out of time, and I want to thank you, and I want to wish you a whole lot of luck. I hope you'll come back sometime and talk to us when you have specific cases that we can talk about. But good luck with getting all of this stuff done. I'm thrilled. I'm going to pass on your suggestions for legislative fixes. I think they're good.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure. And thank you for all that you're doing, okay?
Thank you. Thanks, Ryan, and good luck.
Okay, thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life.
I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.